Hi, I'm Chris Nessie from the House of EdTech podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. And make sure to check out all the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. And now, the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back for another episode of the Leader of Learning podcast, the show where educators can come find inspiration to transform education through effective leadership. I'm your host, Dan Krynas. Let's get started. Hello, leaders of learning. Once again, welcome back. Thanks for joining me on this podcast and this episode, episode 34. I have a really good one lined up for you this time. But before we get there, I just want to, first of all, wish you a happy Thanksgiving. We just had Thanksgiving recently, and I would be remiss if I did not wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving and, of course, a wonderful holiday season. As for this episode, episode 34, I bring on a good friend of mine and an amazingly inspiring leader of learning himself, Basil Morin, who is not only a good friend, but also a fellow 2017 ASCD Emerging Leader. And one of the things that I admire about him and his work as an educator and an educational administrator is understanding how to meet people where they're at, whether that be students or staff, getting to know them as people, understanding their mindsets, and working to develop them to become lifelong learners. He's especially gifted at doing this with students at risk. And one of the things that I've really understood over the 13 years of my career is that this work is extremely, extremely important. Just a very short story about me. When I began teaching, I worried that I was going to have trouble connecting to the students that I would be working with as a brand new teacher in the Bronx and New York City schools. But to be honest, the work became easier than I thought it would be. And before long, I was really striking up such positive relationships that I could tell that many of my students were really enjoying being in my class and learning about the things that we were discussing. My friend Basil shares a lot of these ideas, and that's what drives him in his work every single day. So without further ado, here is my interview with Basil.
Okay, guys, I have an exciting guest for this episode, a friend of mine, fellow ASCD Emerging Leader, Mr. Basil Morin. If you could, Basil, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to everybody, who you are, where you are, what you do.
Absolutely, Dan. I am Basil Morin, a proud assistant principal at Churchland High School for Portsmouth Public Schools in Portsmouth, Virginia. As Dan has said, I am also a 2017 Emerging Leader and proud to be a fellow brother for Dan in the same cohort. And also, Dan, at this time, I'd like to thank you for having me on your podcast. I'm very supportive of the work that you're doing and the mission and vision of empowering leaders to reach their full potential. And if it wasn't for people like you, you know, really speaking to my life and helping me be where I am, I would not be where I am today to help students and teachers to be better.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And thank you for coming on and being a guest here, because I really do admire the work that you're doing. And actually, you know, for the audience's sake, what they didn't hear was that we just had a conversation before we started recording. And I said, man, the more we keep talking, the better fodder it will be for a good podcast episode. So I'm going to actually back up to something that we were talking about before I hit record. And one of the things that you and I have in common is that we are lifelong learners. And not only are we lifelong learners, but we really thrive on being able to model that for the students that we work with, both trying to earn that highest level of education we can get, the doctoral degree. And I think for relatively similar reasons. So I guess if you could just talk about kind of what your inspiration was to get to that level and to model lifelong learning.
Absolutely, Dan. So for me, actually in my family, I'm one of the first sons, you know, nephew, cousins to have earned a master's degree or EDS degree. And so even in that respect, I could have stopped there and been pretty well off and had the family proud of me. But again, I have a lot of mentors who were like, Basil, take that extra step and get that doctorate. That will increase your capacity and what you can do in the educational field, as well as make you a true mentor and model for what lifelong learning is. So for me, it's kind of a personal goal I've had for a while, the last couple of years, but also thinking back to when I was in first and second grade and I was reading on the on the kindergarten reading level, and I was always behind kind of in literacy and having reading coaches and specialists work with me to be where I am today. If you would have told me 10 years ago I would be where I'm at, I would have laughed at you because I didn't see that for myself. And so even in my role now as an administrator, I a lot of times with students will let them know where I am so they can see the progress and they can see what I've done. And I let them know, hey, it's possible for you as well. You just have to put the work in, be have a lot of determination and will, and you can make it happen. So for a lot of my kids, I really want to know what their post-secondary goals are. Even in a discipline or due process, I say, hey, what do you want to do after high school? And I make it more about them. And then I say, well, listen, this discipline we're kind of going through right now, this can't happen to make that goal happen. And then moving forward, what are we going to do differently so you can achieve your goal? So a lot of times for them, I'm just spitting back to them what they want, and they're showing them that, hey, anyone can do it, especially if I can.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, I'm at a middle school level, and so it's hard. And actually, I just had this conversation with my students the other day. It's really hard for them to see past the noses on their faces, especially when it comes to like higher education or their plans or goals for the future. But at the very least, I do find a responsibility in myself to model that sort of lifelong learning for students. And while I may not have had quite the same background as you, I was a good student in school all the way through high school. But in college, to be honest, I got kind of lost. And I had always sort of played the game of school, and I played it pretty well. But I started to not be a real student anymore. And I wanted to get back to what it meant to really truly be a good student. And actually, it took getting my master's, I have two master's degrees, in order to do it. And once I sort of felt that pride, then I was like, man, I don't want to stop. And I do think that it's been pretty inspiring, you know, for my students to see that as well.
Absolutely. And again, just people who look up to you and proud of you for what you've done. Like I said, that self-pride is huge. That also taps into that self-efficacy. And once you, just like with students, when they have positive reinforcement, you want to go for more. You want to do more. You want to do better. And something that like Oprah Winfrey said that I think is so powerful is when you know better, you do better. And so I think that's for anybody, no matter what age, it doesn't have an age limit. When you know better, you're able to do better in life and be able to help others along the way.
Yeah. I totally agree. And, you know, keeping in line with this whole idea of being a lifelong learner and modeling for your students and for you in an administrative role, it may look a little different, but just in general, as an educator, I think part of that is, of course, building meaningful relationships so that you can get through to students. And one of the things I admire about you and the work that you're doing is being able to do that and to support these kids who may or may not be in the same place that you were when you were younger, but, you know, might be at risk, let's say. How do you go about doing that? What kinds of things do you bring to the table to really tap into those relationships and build up those kinds of students?
Absolutely. So for me personally, I think back to my days when I was in middle school or high school and how teachers made me feel and how that really helped, impacted me as a student and made me want to do better. Even if it's something that I wanted to do, I wanted to do it for my teacher because I respected him or her. And so for me, I've been doing a lot of reading personally. And so I think I've shared some of my thoughts about what it is to build relationships. And a lot of people who know me know that's very dear to my heart. So for me, there are 7 essential principles that I found in the book of Michael Fallon's Leading in the Culture of Change. I think that they kind of really emulate what I try to live my life after. And one of the first principles is setting clear standards and letting kids know what I expect from you. I have high standards for you, no matter your cultural background, your socioeconomic background. We can accomplish whatever you want to. And so that is really huge for me, is letting them know I have standards for you and we're going to reach them together. I think also expecting the best from students and not letting them to lower the bar for themselves. And with a lot of teachers, that's where I see a lot of the lack and a lot of professional development I've been able to provide, is sometimes their own biases and their own things they've went through, or the differences that you spoke to, Dan, earlier, because they are a different race or ethnicity from the student, they feel like they can't really speak to them, and that's not really the truth. So having the expectation of you can be the best you can be and I can help you reach that. And then also along with that is paying attention to students and their personal needs. Every student has a different need. Every student has a different walk of life. So getting to know that child and hearing their story will allow me as an administrator, allow you as a teacher to understand how you can best meet the needs of the students and how you can help them to get to where they're trying to go to. I think the number four is personalized recognition. Something that people really appreciated about Bill Clinton was that he was great with people relations, and he knew people by their name, and he established a connection. So for kids, you think about the Maslow hierarchy of needs. Think about why students, or especially at-risk minority students, why they join gangs. They want to feel a part of something. They want to be a part of something. And so they will go to the negative side to make that happen. So how can we provide that same feeling of family, love, and value within the school environment? And that's what I do by personally recognizing students and saying, hey, this is your goals. Let's go after it. I know your name. I know what you're trying to accomplish. We can make that happen together. I think the fifth is telling the story. People need to know your story and how, as administrators, for me, when I'm in professional development, I share the success stories of students that most of the teachers know because there are a lot of discipline issues. But the successes, again, keep teachers wanting to do better. And then also celebrating with students those small wins, whether it's athletics, whether it's passing a quiz, whether it's they're being promoted to the next grade. Celebrate those wins with those students because that keeps that connection going. And then last, setting, as we kind of spoke about earlier, setting the expectation and being the example. As an administrator, it's very important for me to be a positive and relatable and approachable administrator and be the administrator that I needed when I was growing up.
That's great. You know, one of the things you said a minute or two ago was something that I literally just had a sort of a texting conversation with a colleague of mine earlier today about, you know, really having high expectations for students, because this is the first year that I'm back to being a classroom teacher in a few years. And I got to be honest, I thought going in that it might be uncomfortable, but I've been very comfortable back in the classroom. And one of the things that I just want to do more than anything is that piece about raising the expectations for students. And you know, not to throw anybody under the bus, but I do think you're right that sometimes it's difficult for teachers. And when it comes to professional development, that piece might be lacking a little bit. But I also have people that I work with who, how can I put this? They kind of make excuses for students sometimes. And I just, you know, I get, like, I totally get what you're saying, where each student really has their own needs. But that doesn't mean that we have to lower the bar. I think having those things work in tandem, where you're saying, look, I recognize each individual student's needs, but I still need them to meet these expectations, right? And are we speaking the same language?
Absolutely.
Yes, is what I'm wondering.
Absolutely. So when I say knowing the child's needs, again, sometimes just the different needs a child has is going to help you to understand how to reach them where they are. And once you know how to reach them where they are, that's where the connection begins. Okay. They say, okay, the teacher administrator understands me. They know what I'm going through. And now that I've built that connection, I'm still going to bring them up to the standard that I need them to be at. But sometimes students will tell you, well, this teacher doesn't like me, or this administrator doesn't like me, or they don't even know me. And they're trying to talk to me and they have no connection. And so I think getting to know the students, getting to know where they are, just helps to build that connection. And then, like you said, Dan, we raise the bar and we say, hey, this is where we are. This is where I expect you to be. This is where I see some deficits. And now we're going to help you to bridge that gap. And so absolutely, when we have those high standards for students, that lets them know as well that you care about them as well, because everyone else, unfortunately, in their life has given up on them and hasn't taken the time to get to understand them and where they are. So now you're providing that support and the advocacy they need.
Yeah. And speaking of, you know, supporting people and not giving up on them, one of the things that you mentioned when we set this interview up was that you might be able to speak to incorporating growth mindset with teachers, coaching teachers. And that's a huge passion of mine as well. And speaking of, you know, the doctoral degree, one of the things that I'd really like to incorporate into my research. So what kind of experiences do you have there? What have you seen when it comes to getting the teachers themselves to be able to grow and to learn and do better professionally?
Yes, Dan. So to be honest with you, when I came into this role, it was something that I knew about, but I realized a lot of my teachers did not know about. So I had to do a lot of groundwork and foundation work to help them understand what the concept of growth mindset was. I would say a lot of the veteran teachers teachers were not really on board, to be honest, at first. A lot of the newer teachers were very, you know, they're gravitated towards it and wanted to learn it. But I've seen a shift in my school where a lot of now, I would say a majority of teachers now are buying books about growth mindset. They're incorporating it into their lessons. And for me, it's important for them to know, we spoke about it at the very beginning, being a lifelong learner. Even if you've been a teacher for 25 years, you can still grow and learn. You haven't reached the 100%, you know, mark where you need to be. You can always grow from somebody. So for me, it's important for me to understand the teachers know what the concept is, and then they incorporate it in their lessons. So for me, a lot of times what I've been doing is helping teachers to understand that there's strategies they can use to help them to be a better teacher, whether that's incorporating exciting technology, whether it's being more hands-on, whether it's bringing more projects in class. And a lot of times for a lot of these teachers, it's just going out and researching and reading books about what it means to help students grow. And so for me, one of my teachers, example I have is that she had a group of students who were pretty rowdy and unruly and they didn't want to learn. And so I told her about the growth mindset. She said, that's not going to work in my classroom. I said, let's try something. You know, you have a quiz on Friday and let's tell your class, if everyone gets above 75%, you'll make them homemade cupcakes. She's like, well, you know, I said, all kids love food. Let's try that. She said, well, okay, let's see what happens. We told the kids, half of them were excited about it, half of them were not. And then what happened was they took the quiz and everyone passed. And so the students were excited, the teacher was excited. And so I went back to her. I said, so now you got to follow through what you said. We got to make these cupcakes. And all the kids enjoyed it. And just to see the excitement from her, I said, that's growth mindset. That's giving kids, you know, helping them understand that, hey, I set a bar, you guys reached it. So now next time we're going to go to 85% and keep them pushing. And so that helped with the culture of her classroom, and that built community. So for me, growth mindset is very huge. And I use it even in my coaching with teachers. I use it with my students one-on-one, helping them understand that anything is possible if you put the time and dedication and work ethic into it. And so I just think it's very important that every school uses it, because it helps you move the needle with student achievement in the direction we need it to, especially with at-risk students.
The Leader of Learning podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. The Education Podcast Network, podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. For more great podcasts, visit edupodcastnetwork.com. The Leader of Learning podcast is also a proud member of Voice Ed Radio, changing the way you talk about education. To listen to more great education content, please visit voiceed.ca.
Yeah, and you know, getting back to a point that we were both making a little while ago when it comes to working with students is that, of course, they're each unique and they have their own needs, and teachers are the same way. And I think sometimes people forget that when it comes to building a growth mindset in teachers, there's no two teachers are alike in the way that they build up a fixed mindset. You know, some teachers build up a fixed mindset with technology, let's say. And of course, you know, the education is moving more toward technology and using that for instructional purposes. Some teachers build up fixed mindsets around student behavior. And when students act up, the teacher kind of shuts down. And it's very interesting, I guess, is what I'm saying. And as someone who's been in a coaching role, one of the things I always try to do was, first and foremost, after building that relationship with the teacher and getting to know them, then try and get to know their mindset around certain aspects of the classroom.
Absolutely. Dan, you just gave two great examples, especially with the technology. Like you said, with building the profile of a 21st century learner, you have to incorporate technology in your classroom. Whether it's at our school division, we use the one-on-one, so every student has a Chromebook, or it's using a BenQ interactive board. You have to incorporate those things, because the students are not going to go into the workforce and that technology is going to be there. So we have to make sure they're ready to participate and being in a position where they can be innovative and learn with the world. And so I think for teachers, some of them did learn to be a teacher 20, 30 years ago, and the technology wasn't rampant then. And so how do you get them to change? And so I have examples on my school where teachers, we had to use the BenQ board. Every classroom has one now. So it's, you know, and teachers were against it. Oh, I don't never use that. And so now some of those same teachers I was coaching throughout the first semester, second semester, they came back to me and said, I can imagine teaching my class without it. Also, the cool thing is that some of the students helped those teachers to learn how to use it. So that also was a relationship building moment, because teachers were vulnerable and said, hey, I don't really know how to use it. Can you help me? And that was also the teacher saying, hey, I'm going to incorporate growth mindset, but let's do more of a flipped classroom. You help me so I can help you, and now we'll continue to learn together. So I think that's huge. And now you said with their behavior, sometimes those biases, those teachers, they talk to each other in teachers' lounge and say, hey, what so-and-so is terrible, but you might be the teacher that could change that kid's life. And so you can't go off of what someone else did because maybe they weren't that, they didn't build the connection, and you can. And so I always take each student, like you said, individually and say, hey, what can I do to place a seed in this child to help them be successful? Can I be the person that can make them be a better person in the world and be a contributing person to society?
All right. And so that, I think, is a nice segue into kind of the last topic that I wanted to discuss with you, which is overcoming biases and creating more equitable opportunities, let's say, for each of the students we teach. Because, you know, again, in my work as an instructional coach, I was trying to do that with teachers and, you know, quote unquote, meet them where they're at, right? And get to know each of them on an individual basis. Yes. I think sometimes teachers still struggle with this with their students, though. Mm-hmm. What have you seen and what have you done to be able to get teachers to overcome those things?
Absolutely. So I was talking about this actually in my doctoral class when we were in a social justice class, and we were talking about how when we talk about equity and bias, or, you know, personal biases teachers have, sometimes they don't even recognize they have bias because that is their normal. And so when I know when I first came to church in high school, I did a professional development on bias and had each teacher do a bias survey. And the survey was self-reflective and it gave a teacher opportunity to see on the scale where they were. Once that was done, I don't have to tell the teacher where they're at. They see it for themselves. And a lot of us teachers who kind of started off with, I don't have a bias, I treat all students the same, I give them equitable opportunities, they realize they were not. And so then I can have the conversation of, based on where you are, what are some of the resources and supports I can give you to help your students be successful? And again, some of it is just understanding that students have some of those socioeconomic things going on before they even come to the school. Before I even came to Portsmouth, again, I lived in Harrisonburg, Virginia, and I took some of my teachers on kind of a, I call it an equity ride. And so I just showed some of the teachers who were coming from middle-class families where some of the students lived. And just seeing the conditions of where they lived, now the teachers have a little bit more of an understanding. They were like, wow, they have to deal with that before they come to school. And I'm ragging on them about a pencil or about not having a book bag or not having their homework done. But I have a better understanding of, wow, they're trying to get out of that environment. And so sometimes just showing teachers where students are at, it helps them to understand, give them a better lens to what to look through. I think a lot of times, too, is I'm showing them videos that kind of, I would say, validate what I'm saying. Someone I really adored is Dr. Rita Pearson and her idea that you have to be a champion for kids. Every child deserves someone who cares about them and values them and loves them as a person. And sometimes I get teachers to understand, sometimes they're going to respect you more as a teacher or administrator than they do their own parents or guardian. And once you take that place in that child's life, you can't take that for granted. You might be the person that they come back to 5, 10, 20 years later and say, thank you for being hard on me. Thank you for even caring and telling me that I could do better, that I could be better than I am. And I can kind of break this generational curse or this curse of poverty on my family and provide better. And so some teachers need to understand that it can be broken, but it takes time. And this work is not easy. There's not a five-step plan to kind of break it down in 10 months as a teacher. It takes time. It takes work. And students want to have structure. They want someone to tell them, hey, I can do better and I can reach higher than my family has. And so I think by making equitable opportunities, we have to look at where students are and help them to see, hey, use the system of education to get past some of the things that you're in. And sometimes teachers don't realize that because of how they've lived, that they can still be a model for kids and still help them to come out of some of those ruts that they're in with as a family.
That's awesome. And I love that we kind of wrapped up with that question and you get it coming back around to the modeling piece, because that's kind of where we started in terms of, you know, us both trying to reach that pinnacle of education, the doctorate degree, and modeling lifelong learning. So once again, thank you so much for coming on. Before we go, though, if you could let everyone know how to connect with you and where to reach you out there, that'd be great.
Absolutely. And again, Dan, thank you so much for this opportunity to be on your podcast and for the work that you're doing. So I have several platforms. I'll use the first main one that I use is Twitter. That's @Basil_Marin. I tweet a lot of things about, again, positivity and how to help our kids to be more successful in the classroom and in life. I've recently added Instagram. So that's @Basil_Marin_inspires. And so I try to put a lot of motivational things to get teachers excited about their day. And the last platform that I primarily use is LinkedIn. Again, and it just kind of shows my progress as an educator, and know that because of people like Dan, who really has blessed me and spoken to my life about how I can be, and now I feel entitled to give back to the next generation and to help other minority and at-risk kids understand that they can do it. And I'm just one of the examples of success stories that they too can be.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you for giving us some time here today. And I'm really excited for this episode to go out, and just keep up the great work, man. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you.
My thanks once again to Basil for coming on as a guest and giving us some of his time and a lot of his thoughts and ideas about how to reach people, students and staff alike, and really tap into their mindset, their backgrounds, to meet them where they're at and inspire that lifelong learning in them. I know Basil's been getting out and speaking about these things at regional conferences and national conferences, and I just really appreciate him sharing these messages here with us. Once again, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate you listening and following along. As I said at the top of the episode, I really wish you and your family a wonderful holiday season. And we will have one more episode before the holiday season. That'll be episode 35 out in 2 weeks. Until then, of course, keep on being a strong leader of learning. Well, that's a wrap on this episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't done so yet, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite way to listen. Also, if you like what you heard, please recommend this podcast to other educators, leaders, friends, or anyone you think would love listening and learning. And don't hesitate to leave a positive review on iTunes or whatever service you use to listen. For more information, head over to leaderoflearning.com. There you can also find the Leader of Learning blog, ways to connect on social media such as Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Voxer, sign up for our newsletter, and even how to purchase Leader of Learning merchandise. Thanks again, and remember, no matter who you are or where you are, you too can be a leader of learning.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.